joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, this is Michael with a programming reminder. The coronavirus update will now air this afternoon following the local newspapers at 4:30 p.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas community update.
Grocery store hours during coronavirus. United Supermarket, 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday. H-E-B, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Customers 60 plus. Orders can be called in 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 833-397-0080. Groceries will be delivered by Favor Delivery. For more information, go to newsroom.heb.com. Market Street, 6 a.m. to midnight. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. Walmart, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. 7 to 8 a.m. curbside delivery pickup for first responders and customers 60 plus with disabilities or at risk.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 69 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-50s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 70s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpey.
And I'm Pete Torpey.
I want this world to be more of an accessible place, especially to the blindness community, because I'm obviously a part of both the NFB, and I also serve as the Vice President of the Blindness Advocacy Network, based out of Georgia. And with the goals of the NFB and the Blindness Advocacy Network, what we're trying to do is to advocate for more accessibility, especially in the disability community.
And that was Elena, a student at the Wisconsin School for the Blind, and she'll be talking about a project in which she participated in, centered around the NaviLens technology.
We'll be speaking with Elena, two of her fellow students, Elias and Marin, and their teacher, Tim Fahlberg, who teaches math and computer science at the Wisconsin School for the Blind. They learned about the NaviLens system through listening to an older episode of Eyes on Success, and they thought that they could expand on the idea and create something useful for their school, which they are now trying to share with other schools. Before getting into all of that, here's our tip of the week, which comes from Tim Fahlberg.
So my tip of the week is to always ask others for help with your projects so that you can get them done well and get them done on time. I feel like this will lessen stress and it makes for stronger relationships and friendships. And make sure to thank to help you using more than words when possible. And then also offer to help others by telling them what you can do to help them. They and you will be glad you work together.
Well, as they say, no man is an island, and we all work better when we work together as a community.
Yes, yes.
And the way they did this project as a team illustrates all of the facets of Tim's tip.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Let's start by meeting Tim. And the students will introduce themselves later.
My name is Tim Fahlberg. I've been teaching math and computer science for the past 5 years at WSBVI, the Wisconsin School for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Janesville, Wisconsin. WSBVI is a residential school, and we serve about 40 students. We have a great leadership, very caring, collaborative team at our school and dorms, and some really extraordinary students that I've had the great privilege to work with, especially on this project. I use a lot of assistive technology in my teaching, which now includes NaviLens, thanks to you.
Eyes on Success is made possible in part by our corporate partners. Underwriting pairs the impact of targeted marketing with the integrity of community goodwill.
Learn more by sending an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is the NaviLens School Kit created by Tim Falberg and his students at the Wisconsin School for the Blind and Visually Impaired.
Tim, tell us about how you found out about NaviLens and the project that you started with your students.
Sure. Back in September, I learned about NaviLens through your podcast, and we started using NaviLens to label things around the school, label places, assistive technology. And then a colleague of mine, Kelly Bailey, told me about a contest that Samsung was holding called Solve for Tomorrow. And the challenge that we chose to solve is to make directional and informational signs accessible, and then also do things like make artwork and assistive technology more accessible. And that's led to some amazing things.
Last week's episode featured Javier Pita, the CEO and founder of NaviLens. But for anybody who missed last week's show, can you please describe the basic NaviLens system?
NaviLens has been primarily used around the world to enable blind, visually impaired people to access public transportation independently. And then it works with colorful, I hate to say QR codes because they're not QR codes, they're much better than QR codes, but they're colorful codes that can be read from anywhere from like a foot away to 100 feet away, depending on their size. And then they can basically speak information about a place, about an object, and transit. They can link to schedules for buses or trains. For assistive technology, they can link to accessible documents. In places, they can, like in our school, they can identify not only where you are, but give you directions, say to your left, where you can get to from where you are. It's pretty exciting that it can work at such distances with these codes, and it can just find these codes in an instant and start either speaking them in words, or it can play ASL videos. It can do a lot for basically the entire population, not just the blind and visually impaired.
NaviLens certainly is a pretty exciting new technology. Can you tell us how you used it in the project with your students and what you tried to do?
Sure. And it really started with one of my students, Marin, who happens to be totally blind. She and I tested out the personal NaviLens tags, which are free, and we thought they had enough promise for labeling places that we decided to write to the company, Javier Pita. Well, not Javier Pita initially, he's the CEO of NaviLens, but he's the one I eventually connected with. And we got access to 50 public NaviLens codes. So that enabled us to print codes of various sizes and got access to the NaviLens cloud, where we could program the codes to speak whatever we wanted to or link to whatever resource we wanted to. And then by demonstrating a small number of those codes, maybe just 5 or 10 codes, to our center director, he liked it so much, he said, why don't you write a proposal? So we wrote a proposal to get 500 tags in our school. And originally I was like, what are we going to do with 500 tags? But we've labeled over 350 places that previously had Braille signs.
What kinds of things have you been tagging with these hundreds of NaviLens tags?
Many directional signs, emergency exits that they didn't necessarily have any Braille. There are lots of posters that have Braille on them that aren't exactly findable by students, to even if they're blind, to even find that there's a poster with Braille. So sometimes we just have a sign that says poster with Braille. I was surprised when I spent hours, and then my sister came and really did a thorough mapping job over several days to identify between 300 and 400 existing signs. But then that doesn't even include the alumni wall, where there are hundreds of pictures. We've actually had to slim it down to one NaviLens code per graduating class.
And then student artworks, we will be able to reuse codes. So right now we have 20 pieces of student artwork that are labeled, and we can go up to probably 50 works of art by students, and then we'll have to start reusing or else get more. It is nice to be able to reuse them. And then with the assistive technology, one of the most exciting things is that we've developed quite a special relationship with the NaviLens company. We're the first school in the United States to adopt NaviLens. And so we've done things like ask them, could we give away the tags, the NaviLens tags that we make for assistive technologies, say a talking TI 30XS calculator that's used by hundreds, if not thousands, of blind visually impaired students, so that they could go and be distributed to all those students and help them. And they've said, sure, absolutely, go for it. So it's not just about our school. And so we've reached out to the Janesville transit system, and we're working with them to put up NaviLens. They'll get their own set of NaviLens signs. We've reached out to an elementary school through our principal, Julie Piper, has a relationship with the principal there, where there are deaf ASL speaking students and visually impaired students, as well as English language learners who, and pre-reading students who can benefit from NaviLens. So there's this whole community outreach piece that we're starting to do, and finding money for these schools through the local Lions Club to fund NaviLens. So it's kind of an all-encompassing and sometimes exhausting project, but it's incredibly rewarding. This technology will soon be everywhere because there's nothing like it. And believe me, I've done a lot of research and tried a lot of things. So it's exciting, and I'll have to share more about the NaviLens school kit. That is one way that we're expecting this can get to a lot of places quickly.
Well, and that's what first caught our attention. We, as you said, did an episode about NaviLens where we spoke with some of the people from the NaviLens Corporation. But then you talked about developing this school kit, and that's a whole nother application that's really intriguing. So could you describe that?
Sure, I'll be happy to. So I asked for the permission of the NaviLens people to work with my students to create a set of tags, and they said, fine. And so two of our students, Marin, who is still at our school, and you'll get to hear from her in a little interview I'll do with her, and then another student, Jenny, who is now back at her high school in Madison, Wisconsin, those two were instrumental in creating a comprehensive list of 52 tags now. And it's meant to be useful primarily at middle and high schools, but when we showed it to an elementary school the other day, the principal saw a lot of value in those tags, and then in adding their own set of public tags. So it's exciting to think that people will be able to go in the United States, schools can go and download a free set of 52 NaviLens tags. They'll need to laminate them and decide how to put them up so they won't get moved. And it's not just about English either. These signs, I haven't talked at all about this, but these signs are all translatable to some 24 languages. And then, like I was saying, the principal at the elementary school, where there are deaf, hard of hearing kids, there's a whole connection, not with the free codes, because those are kind of pre-programmed, but although those can be translated to the 24 languages that NaviLens works in. But just to think of that as being those school kits being out, I think, thousands of schools and getting schools talking about, you know, this is a start, but what more can we do to make our schools more accessible for all students, whether they're blind and visually impaired, or they're English language learners, or they're pre-readers, or they're ASL speakers. You know, we have to do more. And so I'm excited that our students get to be, and I get to be a part of that.
So just to be a bit more concrete about this collection of 52 signs designed for schools, there'll be signs such as cafeteria, boys' room, girls' room, etc. Is that the type of thing you're talking about?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. They're in fact, for restrooms alone, there's a, you know, like a staff restroom, and then there's a men's room, men's restroom, women's restroom, boys' restroom, girls' restroom. There are locker rooms. There's an all-gender restroom. My daughter, Sarah, suggested that because that's, you know, that's key. But then, sure, commonplace like auditorium, science lab, math classroom, of course. In the other common rooms, in schools, they're pretty much there. We were very careful in going through and then having the list reviewed by a number of people.
So this collection covers almost anybody's generic situation, and if they want something custom, then they go to NaviLens themselves.
Correct. And eventually, they would want, very quickly, they would actually want to get their own set of tags, because what they will find is that they want to do something called wayfinding, which is very powerful, and we just learned about it a couple weeks ago, so that somebody can now step into our school and imagine going into some high school that you have never, or any place, but I'll start with a school. You know, you walk into the lobby and you're like, where is the principal's office? You have a meeting there. Unless you find somebody to lead you there, the signage is probably not that great to get you to very many places independently. And so by having a set of tags that you've pre-programmed and added wayfinding to, you can help people get to anywhere in the school.
And so when you walk in the door, immediately your phone will pick up a sign that says, nurse's office is to your left and down the hall 50 feet or something like that.
Right now in our school, if you scan, say, the lobby tag, in NaviLens Go, there are two buttons at the bottom. There's a scan that will just reveal the text about, okay, this is the, you're in the lobby and to your right is the welcome center, etc. But if you tap on the Go button in the lower right corner, you'll get a list of destinations. And then once you choose a destination, this is just rocks. Choose a destination, okay, so you choose the cafeteria. Then any sign after that that you scan in NaviLens Go, there will be an arrow that comes up on the screen, a very large augmented reality arrow that will point you in the direction that you need to go to get to your chosen destination. So that's visual, because that's NaviLens Go, which is good for fully sighted or low vision or deaf of hard of hearing wheelchair travelers. Soon, in the next month or so, in NaviLens, it will work similarly, but it'll be voice, so that after you choose the destination, say you're a voiceover user, you've chosen a destination, then as you're moving around and it's picking up tags, it'll tell you, you know, go right, go left, turn around maybe if you're going in the opposite direction that you need to go.
So you're guided as you progress to your destination. That's great.
Correct.
If you want to hear this in action, there are actually a series of videos that Tim and his students created on their YouTube site, and we will have a link to that in the show notes for this show.
It's really exciting, and because everyone can benefit from wayfinding, I look at it as the feature, probably the number one feature that will enable this to get everywhere, and that will allow people to say, oh, this technology, if it can benefit everyone, that's an easy thing to do. If it can only benefit a small subset of people, that's a harder sell. So I like the fact that NaviLens, because of its universal design, it can really serve all people. Oh, but it just happens to really, really help people who have been so poorly served in the past. And in my case, I'm thinking of blind and visually impaired students. So I like the idea that everyone can benefit, but I like the idea that it can really level the playing field for our students and for blind, visually impaired adults who need to be able to get to places efficiently and so much more.
That is so cool.
One of the things that's exciting for me that NaviLens can do that might be a little uncomfortable for people to think about, but okay, Nancy, you and I get to go into any public restroom, and because we have vision, we can just see what the layout is and just, you know, do what we need to do, all right? One of the things that's exciting for me, and I've confirmed this with Maren, who's totally blind from birth except for a little light perception, is the ability with NaviLens to fully describe a restroom. So that if I'm blind and I'm approaching a public restroom, I can not only hear that it's, okay, it's a men's restroom, or it's okay, so Maren, it's a women's restroom, but I can hear a description of that restroom. And me personally, I think that before too long, when people find out that this is possible with NaviLens, I think that the ADA should make all signs include NaviLens tags that fully describe that bathroom, so that if a person happens to be blind, they can not only independently find a restroom, But before they get to it, the 5 or 10 seconds as they're approaching it, they can hear what the layout is, and then they can independently and successfully use a restroom.
That would be very helpful. I avoid many large restrooms in airports and other venues like that just because it can be a real nightmare wandering into there, not knowing the layout.
Correct. Correct.
The other thing that's great about your work here is not only is this great positive reinforcement to encourage people to go into STEM careers, which we need more of these days, and they're acting as role models for others to see how exciting this can be, but they're also making a bigger impact in terms of showing people around the country and around the world that these technologies can be very useful, and showing people how these technologies can be used to improve accessibility for everybody.
I couldn't agree more. It's my students, to a person, they've told me, you know, they're not really interested in any fame. They just want to improve the world.
And speaking of the students, Tim did us the favor of interviewing several of them, and here they are describing their roles in the project and their attitudes towards the project.
And I'm joined by Elena Charles. Elena, could you introduce yourself, please?
Hello, my name is Elena Charles. I am a student at WCBVI and a proud active member of the National Federation for the Blind. The biggest contribution I have made to the Navilens project is making the videos on the Navilens playlist accessible to the blind. Since there's obviously visuals there, but there's no auditory description to describe the visual content, which is very important to me that we have audio description.
We've talked a lot about your future and what you hope for NaviLens, but I'd like you to share a little bit about what your hopes are for NaviLens outside of the WCBVI campus, please.
Since WCBVI and NaviLens were a huge success, my goal is to integrate NaviLens at the Milwaukee Area Technical College campus, where I am planning on pursuing my associate's degrees in both music occupations and audio production.
Excellent. And then beyond MATC, am I correct, you have plans beyond that for college as well?
Yes. My plans are to go to University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee at the Peck School of the Arts for a bachelor's degree in music composition and technology.
And I know we've talked about your desire to have NaviLens at both MATC and UW-Milwaukee, which are both huge campuses.
Yes.
And today I'm joined by...
Hey, my name is Elias.
And Elias, could you introduce yourself?
Yes, so my name is Elias Tyser. I am a student at WCBVI. I am currently in 9th grade.
And Elias, you made quite a unique contribution to our project. Could you describe a little bit about your contribution?
I showed how art can be accessible with NaviLens.
And how does that work?
So you have a tag on an art project, and what you need to do is you just, you know, put your device, your smart device, by that tag, and it'll tell you if the art piece has a description, what that says. There's a video on the WCBVI Videos YouTube channel about that.
And so, for example, for your art project that's on the wall at WCBVI, there's a NaviLens tag on it. And so you mentioned that there's a description for your piece of artwork, and you actually created that description, didn't you?
Yes, I typed that up myself.
Okay. So on the actual artwork, there's the actual artwork, and then there's the text that you typed up very nicely. But then I guess, am I correct, if the idea is that if someone has a print disability or if they are totally blind, they wouldn't be able to read that text. There's no braille on it. But the NaviLens contains all of the text that's on your piece of artwork so that someone can scan the tag and, in a sense, hear your voice reading the text that's on your artwork?
It's not necessarily hearing the person's voice, it's hearing, you know, the Navilens voice or the voiceover reading the text to you.
Oh, and that's a great point. So it, on another day, it could be, actually with your piece of artwork, there's a video of you explaining about this, but in general, it's right, the Navilens voice, which could be in English, or with Google Translate, it could be in Spanish or one of a number of other languages. And right. And did you enjoy the Navilens project?
I loved it, and I hope that it can move forward from here. I know we're in a tough time, but I'm hoping that when all of this is over, that the Navilens project can continue and go even further, because there's a lot of possibilities with it.
Marin, could you introduce yourself and share about your involvement in the Navilens project?
Yeah. My name is Marin. I'm a sophomore at WSBVI. I've been here ever since third grade, and I've had no vision except light perception almost since birth. I lost it at like 6 months or something around there. As for the Navilens project, it first started last September, I think, and we were talking, and he found it and showed it to me, and I saw potentials, and we started putting tags around our school, and we made some YouTube videos about it, but that's not my real prouder moment in the project, because I'm really not in the project for fame. I'm not in it for, like, self-gain. I'm not in it for any of that stuff. I'm in it for just making places better and improving accessibility. I'd have to say that my most proud moment in the project was me working on the school kit. Basically, I made a list of places, and we basically made tags and put them into a whole kit. And that's available on the Navilens website or on Teachers Pay Teachers for free. There was also a news interview on NBC News with Isabel Lawrence, and I would have to say that's another of my prouder moments, because I truly felt we were recognized and that we had potential when that happened. I felt that we were going to actually get somewhere with this.
So thank you so much to Tim and Elena and Elias and Marin for all of your contributions and for sharing them with us. And we hope that the school kits are able to get disseminated to many other schools.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about the Navilens navigation system, the Navilens school kit, the Blind Advocacy Network, and how to contact Tim Fahlberg directly if you want more information from him.
So if people are interested in connecting with you to find out more about some of these concepts and ideas, where would you send them?
They can reach me through my school email, which is tim.fahlberg, and I'll spell that. So that's TIM.FAHLBERG at wcbvi.k12.wi.us, or it might be simpler, it's tim.fahlberg, TIM.FAHLBERG at gmail.com. Either one is fine.
Do you know offhand the main website for Navilens?
So Navilens website is navilens.com.
And here's Tim talking to Elena again.
And do you want to say any last comment to them before we close?
If you would like more information on the Blind Advocacy Network, you can check out the Blind Advocacy Network Facebook group, or you can Google Blind Advocacy Network, and you will see our website. And we're an affiliate of Vision Inside Possibilities.
And of course, you can find all of that contact information in the show notes associated with this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 2109. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about some of our favorite tips of the week. Every episode of Eyes on Success starts with a tip of the week. These tips offer suggestions from people we interview about anything from the benefits of participating in sports to the importance of learning blindness skills. This week, we'll share some of our favorite tips from the past 10 years with our listeners.
And we've had a lot of positive feedback from our listeners about that, so we hope you'll join us for that episode next week.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.
Hello, this is Michael with a programming reminder. The coronavirus update will now air this afternoon following the local newspapers at 4:30 p.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 70 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-50s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the mid-70s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, and welcome to our program. My name is Peter Gilmore, and I'll be reading Men's Health Magazine, here on site, into Sound Radio. And first up, vitamin C will not save us all. COVID-19 has spiked the sale of vitamin C products. The nutrient does have some powerful health benefits. It's just that preventing colds and the flu, let alone COVID, isn't one of them. The claim, vitamin C is a super nutrient, one that boosts your immunity. People have been taking C to stop colds and flus for years, so it's proven. So why not take a supplement to protect against diseases, especially this time of year? What's actually true? Vitamin C helps your body make collagen. That's good for skin and bones. It also helps absorb iron. That's good for muscle growth. And create carnitine. That's good for turning dietary fat into energy. Vitamin C is also an antioxidant, so it helps combat free radicals caused by chronic stress and protect your immune cells as they fight off an infection. What's bogus? Research in the 70s suggested a link between vitamin C and cold prevention, but better science has shown no connection. Vitamin C may shorten duration of a cold, but ingesting C in high doses does not boost immunity. Taking too much can lead to an immune system suppression. Well, what else is totally bogus? Well, while vitamin C supplements may help lower your risk of sickness after prolonged physical strain, such as running a marathon, research hasn't proved that taking vitamin C can fight COVID-19. Don't trust companies that suggest otherwise. Your takeaway? Eat vitamin C-rich foods daily. Unlike with vitamins B12 and K, your body can't store C. Whole foods are also full of other healthy nutrients that work within your system with C, producing more benefits than the vitamin can alone. So, should you supplement? Probably not. You're likely consuming all the vitamin C you need without realizing. If you eat one large orange and 1.5 cups of cooked broccoli, you've hit your 200 to 400 milligram recommendation for the day. If you eat like no produce, then talk to your doctor about a supplement. Next up, a sleep doctor's guide to sleep apnea. A night in a sleep lab during a fellowship at Stanford University explained what Dr. Gerard Miskell had felt for years: morning grogginess and afternoon brain fog. He discovered, like 1 in 4 men, he had sleep apnea. That's when the tongue and throat muscles relax and may make it more difficult to breathe. which can potentially disrupt sleep. Sleep apnea can also increase the risk of heart disease, dementia, mood disorders, erectile dysfunction, and sleeping in the guest bedroom. Now, here's how he managed it. Number one, close the bar early. A few beers before bed can make it easier to fall asleep, but alcohol is also a central nervous system depressant. As a result, reduce your respiratory drive and increase relaxation, which can lead to more snoring and sleep apnea. I'm not perfect, but I usually drink within, I usually avoid drinking within 2 to 3 hours before going to bed. Two, crank some cardio. I cycle on a recumbent bike at home 3 to 5 times a day, or 3 to 5 times a week, for at least 30 minutes. I have no interest in sweating to death in the Texas heat. A person with better cardiovascular fitness is going to have better respiratory muscle tone, which usually means less loose tissue to block off the back of the throat. Consistent exercise is more important than rigorous exercise, so pick a workout that's easy to stick to. Number three, commit to a CPAP. I wear a ResMed AirSense 10 CPAP. That's a continuous positive airway pressure machine every night. People joke that it's an effective form of birth control. Not true. Just put on after sex. Once I found the right fit, I slept much better, and now feel awake during the day. It's still a hard sell, however. Nobody wakes up one day and screams, "My God, I have to wear underwear every day for the rest of my life." But that's what they think about a CPAP. I tell them to give it time. 4 out of every 5 patients prescribed have stayed on it. And four, sleep naked. Last thing I take off before getting into bed is my smartwatch. I don't like the sensation of something on my wrist when I'm sleeping. And the sleep data you get from these isn't that accurate. More important than assessing my sleep now is getting it. I head to bed around 11 p.m. and wake up around 6 a.m. every day. And another note, another way to get help with sleep apnea. First, try sleeping on your side. That doesn't help if you're reluctant to use a CPAP. I was at first. You might try a mouthpiece that opens up your airway by shifting your jaw and tongue forward. It works for a lot of people with mild to moderate sleep apnea, but wasn't as comfortable for me as a CPAP. Some of my patients are candidates for surgery to trim the tissue in the back of the throat. Newer procedures, like implants that stimulate airway muscles to keep them from relaxing, are also worth talking about with your doctor. And as a personal note, as one who also suffers from sleep apnea, everything in that article is very, very accurate. And I think you should take it at heart if you have any problem with sleeping or bad snoring. Next up, do you really need an air filter? Home is now life. Airborne particles, especially thanks to the coronavirus, are also life. Do you need something to clear the air, like now? Long before COVID-19 had us all spending a lot more time inside our homes and worrying about airborne everything, the quality of the air indoors was making people sick. Air pollution can come from pretty much anything. Candles, grooming products, burning firewood, printers, and even your cooking. These pollutants intermingle with those which enter through the drafty doors or windows, including particles from trees on the road, factory smokestacks, and plowed fields. All told, levels of air pollutants indoors may be 2 to 5 times as high as the air outside, and they contribute to health problems ranging from burning eyes to lung disease. All this breathable filth is made up of gases and particles of various sizes. Though the U.S. government tracks large inhalable particles, such as diesel exhaust and power plant emissions, it has no data on dangerous ultrafine particles, so small they can cross into the bloodstream. That's according to Dr. Johns Balms of UC Berkeley. And if there's insufficient data, that makes it challenging for researchers to gauge health effects in humans. Animal studies are, unfortunately, the best thing science has, and the findings aren't exactly great news. Researchers have noticed that when animals are exposed to pollution, they can develop lung infections that can spill into the circulation. That inflammation may contribute to diabetes, obesity, and neurodegeneration, resulting in diseases including Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. In the shorter term, bad air can give you a headache or sore throat and cause dizziness or fatigue. Poorly ventilated rooms, can also muck up your ability to think straight. They may leave you bathing in, and more important, breathing in, particles that contain airborne viruses. But air filters may help. The quality of your indoor environment impacts your health and performance. The science is clear on this, says Dr. Joseph Allen. Whether you should rush out and buy one or more is a bit more nuanced. Does everyone need an air filter right now? Maybe. Everyone who lives in an area affected by wildfire smoke should prepare to filter the air in your home. Many people who have had clean air in the past are now experiencing some of the worst air quality in the country. If your weather report doesn't include air quality, check airnow.gov and look for a good rating. Throwing windows open if your outdoor air is okay, or even just cracking them, can bump up your home's air exchange rate, the rate at which air inside turns over with fresh air from outside. It could also help protect the people in your home if you or someone you live with has been infected with the coronavirus. Isolate the sick person in a bedroom with a box fan set up to suck air out the windows. But what if you can't open your windows? Then it's time for an air filter. HEPA air filters collect 99.97% of particles at 0.3 microns, but they're even better for larger and smaller particles. This is due to the way particles and other sizes, including particles that carry the coronavirus, move through the air and crash in the filter. For smaller apartments, classrooms, or shops that already have a high ventilation rates, you could see a 90% reduction in particles of the sizes that convey the coronavirus in indoor air. That's an order of magnitude increase in the risk of exposure to this virus. That's pretty darn good. How do you pick an air filter? One, find the right rating. First, pay attention to the clean air delivery rate. That's CADR. Units carry three CADR ratings, one for tobacco smoke, one for dust, and one for pollen. The Association of Home Appliance Manufacturers, which issues these ratings, advises choosing an air filter with a CADR for smoke that's at least two-thirds of the area of the room where you'll use it. So a 100-square-foot room would need a CADR for smoke of 80 or more. Two, skip the bells and whistles. Ionizing air cleaners clean air by emitting ions that latch onto particles and force them to the floor. Unfortunately, those fallen pollutants end up dirty in surfaces. Worst, ionizers also give off ozone, which can react with gases, such as volatile organic compounds, to create secondary pollutants that can be irritating or harmful. Other units claim to kill virus particles with UV light or silver-impregnated HEPA filters. Our experts recommend sticking with the basics. Three, consider noise. For your machine to work best, it has to be run on full blast, and purifying fans can be loud. Most units carry noise ratings measured in dBAs. Lower numbers make for a quieter machine. Mentel says, you've bought a purifier. Great. Now put it somewhere in your home where you spend a lot of time. like your bedroom. Set it up slightly off the floor, away from the walls. Sometimes a purifier's air intake or exhaust can resuspend particles on the floor into the air. Placing on a low table can help you steer clear of that. Also make sure it's at least 3 feet away from walls and corners to avoid recirculating the air in one area. And here are three purifiers that Men's Health likes. If you're into looks, the Dyson Pure Cool Link Tower Purifying Fan. The design forward unit has a sculptural look and clears the air with a HEPA filter. It requires little floor space. You can control it with an app if you like that sort of thing. $500 from Dyson.com. If your budget is tight, well, there's the Blue Air Blue Pure 411. This unobtrusive purifier is made for small rooms, 161 square feet. It's a triple filtration system that allows more air to be pushed through it than a typical HEPA filter. So it runs on the quieter side. $120 from blueair.com. And finally, if you have a large room, the Conway Air Mega 400. Some units designed for large rooms look, well, let's call them bulky. This one, meant to work in spaces of up to 1,500 square feet, does the job without a big visual insult. $650 from Coway.com. Need to stop here, remind you that you're listening to Men's Health Magazine on site in the Sound Radio. You can listen to site and the sound on channel HD4 on 88.7 KUHF, channel 8.5 on TV, streaming on your computer or smartphone, as well as on Amazon Alexa and Google Home devices. You can also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at siteinthesound.org. We are Site in the Sound Radio since 1967. And next up, an in-the-moment father is a... An in-the-moment father is an excellent father. I'm clearly still doing my best to be one. My daughter, Lo, was born in February 2006 to my beautiful wife, Martel. I played a limited role. During the first years of Lo's life, I was both saddened and surprised by the amount of work it took for me to resist retreating into my own default detached mode, in which I'd fret about the past, wonder about the future, or daydream about something as deliciously beside the point as McDonald's McFlurry. And here's the funny thing about a baby. You have to keep it alive. My checking out put me at a distinct and dangerous disadvantage in the then vital task at hand. Feed baby, don't drop baby. Pray I get the right baby. As if by some twist of fatherhood fate, Lo was born the same month Fox canceled Arrested Development. Though job loss stoked my anxieties, in hindsight the timing was perfect. As I began to wake up to the role of my daughter's life, I started to wake up to the realization that I hadn't been present for most of my life. So over my next 14 years with Lo, I took the lessons I learned from February 2006 and tried to apply it as a dad. After my daughter was old enough to do a somewhat decent job of keeping herself alive, I learned that the vast majority of parenting is not Instagram worthy. In fact, the bulk of being a father is pretty ordinary. And by ordinary, I actually mean boring. Don't get me wrong, I adore my daughter, but the world and social media filter a different picture about parenting. It can actually cause you to feel shame if you do ever feel bored. The truth is that making the same facial expressions for an hour because it makes your baby giggle, or answering 1,000 questions on a car ride, or sitting with her while we watched Dora the Explorer on loop is boring. But I had to consciously make a choice and see that the bigger picture of me as a father is so much stronger than my impatience, distracted, and momentarily feelings of wanting to escape. Many times, my mind wants to retreat somewhere else. I have to quietly say to myself, not now, to return to the present moment. Because playing a board game with Lo, sitting with her and talking her through a challenge, or hearing all about her day, these are the ordinary moments that hold the most beauty, value, and longevity for both my daughter and me. But here's what's crazy. Even though my heart and mind fully know this, I still have to fight the urge on a daily basis to give everything else in the world my attention above and beyond my daughter. There's a song that I love called Big Love, Small Moments by J.J. Heller. The chorus goes like this. Big magic in the mundane, the big picture in a small frame. Everything is sacred when you take time to notice. Big love happens in the small moments. Big love happens in the small moments. Yes, I'm going to screw up. Yes, parenting feels overwhelming at times. No, I will never be 100% present all the time. But thankfully, I have the grace of God to walk me through it all. And McFlurry on the days when that doesn't seem like enough. And now some profiles of how 2020 has made certain people stronger. Jacob Bonham writes, from alone to a loner. The pandemic has made the typical friend-challenged American male more isolated than ever. But there is hope. Long before 2020 turned life on its head, my wife and a group of her college friends had a tradition. Twice a month, they'd meet at the yoga studio after work, sweat for 90 minutes, and then go out for sushi. These evenings were never about yoga or sushi. Over my dinner, my wife and her friends would fill one another in on their lives, their works, their relationships. Everyone talked, everyone listened. My wife climbed into bed later. Her face was alit, her reserves replenished. I usually spent those evenings at home with our two boys, microwaving enchiladas, washing up, getting them into bath, putting them into bed. I felt like a modern, supportive man, making space for my partner's career and social needs. But mostly, I felt alone. Once the quarantine hit, my wife's meetups were virtual. Instead of yoga and sushi, they arrange group FaceTimes, looping in friends from out of state. As I read the boys to sleep, my wife would sit in the other room, telling stories and laughing. I wanted friends like that. Friends I could trust with questions like, how's your sex drive? How's your rage these days? How much do you dribble after you pee? Somehow I still couldn't muster the energy to check in with my guy friends or set up time to talk. My wife would have supported it, facilitated even, but I was feeling low and I was busy, working from home while taking care of the kids in the house. Maybe I told myself that my friends were busy too. I tried to be productive. I was exercising a lot. I cleaned out the spice cabinet. Built a bookshelf. Yet as the weeks, then months dragged on, I started to feel like a caged animal. Outside of my family, my isolation was nearly complete. How many guys like me were out there? Coronavirus castaways. Lonelier now. Working from home. No sporting events to attend. No bars to gather in than ever before. Much has been written about the importance of male friendships. Research shows that men with emotionally intimate male friendships are healthier. There's some evidence that they have a deeper romantic relationships, a more engaged parents, and perform better at work. They also live longer. Social isolation can be deadlier than smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So, do men have enough friends? We have them, generally as many as women do, but the quality of those friendships is very different. So says Dr. Robert Garfield, author of Breaking the Male Code, Unlocking the Power of Friendships. Dr. Garfield, who runs support groups he calls Friendship Labs, told me that COVID-19 is accentuating these problems. A pre-coronavirus survey from the insurance company Cigna revealed that 3 out of 5 Americans reported they are lonely. The rate was higher for men than women. Another survey from a group called Social Pro, taken at the height of the lockdown in April, found that coronavirus loneliness was significantly above average in the U.S. compared with other 3 developed countries in the survey, and hit millennial men the hardest. But does our pre-existing loneliness plus the pandemic have to equal more loneliness? Dr. Garfield doesn't think so. He hopes COVID-19 has inspired men to get better at making, having, and being friends. It's a wake-up call, he says. Dr. Mark Baggy, a doctor working remotely in biotech from the Philadelphia suburbs, has developed deeper relationships with his friends during the pandemic by communicating actual feelings. People open up over time if you let them, he says, and when you open up to them, that will help feed it. So far, the trade-offs of depth versus face-to-face interactions has been okay with me. We're turning the focus from our day-to-day BS. How are you going to survive? Is the world going to survive? The economy. Maintaining friendships under quarantine requires action. We're not bumping into Kevin at the water cooler. If you want to talk to a work friend, or anyone really, you schedule it. The problem is, the novelty of Zoom with friends, kind of fun back in May, is worn off. The solution? Do it anyway. Well, we've actually come to the end of our program. I've been reading Men's Health Magazine. I'm Peter Gilmore. It's been a production of Sight in the Sound Radio, Houston, Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3. Hello, this is Michael with a programming reminder. The coronavirus update will now air this afternoon following the local newspapers at 4:30 p.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas community update.
When it's open, Midland County Public Library, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Curbside pickup at Downtown Branch, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Throughout the week, we bring you health and accessibility programming. Mondays at 10 a.m., keystrokes. Mondays at 5 p.m., the assistive tech update. Mondays at 5:30 p.m., blind abilities. Wednesdays at 10 a.m., the blindness and disability news hour. The AARP report and the diabetic news programs fill out the hours Thursdays at 4 a.m. and 10 a.m., and Sundays at 6 p.m. Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.